From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to this Thursday morning edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast. Chase Parham, Neil McCready coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio. Today on the podcast, lengthy interview with Mike Dettier. We teased it yesterday. One of the best football minds in the country. He is phenomenal. Talk a lot of Ole Miss today. Talk a lot of SEC today. A little New Orleans Saints as well. So you're going to get your football fix on today's podcast with Mike. We're going to go to him here pretty soon. It is probably going to rain all day today, all day tomorrow, as that tropical storm is making its way into the continental United States, and we're going to get a little remnants of that on the way through. I think, Neil, I think we are pretty washed out tomorrow as we get going.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Lots and lots and lots of rain. Lots of rain.
I think it said 90% today, and that was probably being a little pessimistic from the standpoint of what the percentage is.
I got out and mowed the yard yesterday, and it started raining.
Isn't that a little counterproductive, because it's just immediately going to grow right back when it rains at 12 inches in the next 48 hours?
Well, it already started, and it started to rain, and I said, screw it. I'm keeping going, finishing this deal.
Sounds like that's kind of your fault and your problem.
Probably was. Probably was, but, you know, I got it done. Oh, fascinating here. The former, not to anyone else, but once Carson and I went to Oklahoma City and we ate at Spaghetti Warehouse because that's where he wanted to eat, and it was perhaps the worst meal I've ever had in my life.
I've never eaten in a Spaghetti Warehouse.
It was awful. It's been closed down.
You don't appear to be stunned by this news.
I'm shocked that it made it as long as it did.
It was that bad?
Worst meal I've ever had.
What'd you get?
I can't remember. It was awful.
Just like spaghetti and meatballs.
Yeah. Something basic.
And it was bad.
Because I'm a believer, if I go to a steakhouse, I'm going to order steak. If I go to a spaghetti house, I'm going to order spaghetti. I'm going to do what they do well. Like the guy that goes to a hamburger joint and insists on getting the chicken sandwich. I mean, what are you doing? Going to a restaurant, what do you do well? What's your specialty?
It was like the fellow member of our beat in Birmingham a couple years ago. We're all at the steakhouse, and he goes, "I'm gonna get the club sandwich." And we looked at him and went, "Okay,
have at it."
Eats it in like 2 minutes. He goes, "That wasn't very good." I'm like, "I'm shocked, blown away."
Some people overthink stuff, man.
Well, and it was like this puppy dog. It was like this puppy dog eye thing too, because like we get in there and we're ordering the food, and like everybody's like, "All right, New York strip with crab on top and all this stuff." And he kind of gets his sandwich and just looks around like,
"What was he doing?
Like, what did you think was going to happen here, bud?" Like,
was he worried about the budget?
I don't know what it was, but
because if you're worried about the budget, you don't go to the steakhouse.
It's happened again. I'm not going to go with names, but it's happened a couple times. Hold on, I'll tell you in a second. Let's get through something, and I'll tell this one. Okay. This one. So, okay. Podcast, as always, brought to you by the Oxford Exxon Highway 6 West in Oxford. Go get the lunch specials, $4.99. Might want to, if it's not raining, grab some ribs on the way home, because you might be hunkered in for a little while if you are in town. So, it wouldn't be the worst case today. You can call ahead, wet or dry. They'll be ready and waiting for you. Also, we've been telling you, Oxford Crystal now, you can go in, you can get the slushes. We got green apple, we got grape, they're made with Sprite, good prices there for the summer months. Also, hand-spun shakes, Oreo, chocolate, and more. Those are the two that interested me the most. So check those out at Highway 6 West, the Oxford Exxon, and the Oxford Crystal, and we're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studio.
We are. Clark Ford's in Amory, 662-257-1900, 662-257-1900. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. No haggling. Right to the bottom line. Great deals. Great vehicles. Great service. All of that at Clark Ford. And then at the end of the deal, Corey and I had a funny conversation about this last night. At the end of the deal, right before everything is finalized, say, "Hey, Corey, so I heard about your dealership on the podcast. You can mention this podcast. You can mention the Oxford Crystal Beer Garden. We dropped one late yesterday with John Hamm, NBA expert, NBA draft tonight. $500 off the bottom line. That's if you live in New York. It's even if you live in Nettleton. And you probably had heard about the dealership before.
It's like when the next door neighbor comes over and goes, hey.
Hey, heard about the dealership on the podcast. $500 off. It's a real thing. Sometimes it's a funny thing. Anyway, that's at Clark Ford in Amory, 662-257-1900.
Yeah, that does happen across. I'll tell something about that in a minute. So anyway, I guess it was Sugar Bowl week. I'm trying to think when it was. That's the only thing that makes sense was we're in New Orleans for the Sugar Bowl week, and we're at Dickie Brennan's Steakhouse. It's a pretty big group, big table or whatever. And we were getting met by Brett Martell, the AP writer for Louisiana. I'm sure you know Brett. And we all kind of go and order some apps, and the whole table's ordering whatever. And order some salads. And the person in question had just ordered a main course, had not ordered any other things, but had eaten. It kind of nibbled at some of the apps that were just table-wide or whatever. Well, Brett had gotten into an accident. And he calls us, and I think he called Kellenberger, and he was like, hey, trying to get there, but got an issue, so don't wait on me, go ahead. And when it first happened, he goes, order for me. So we'd order, and it was like a Capri salad, and then whatever the main course was that he ordered, I don't remember. So he food gets there, he's still not there, waiting. And the journalist in question is quite hungry, but had not ordered the other courses that we had ordered, so it was just sitting there. And finally, so Brett calls back, and he goes, hey, I'm not going to make it. I'm sorry, can't get here. The person didn't have insurance, or whatever the situation was with his wreck. So we look at the person and go, well, there's pre-salad sitting there. Just go ahead. And he kind of like picks up his fork and is going to whatever, and the phone rings again, and Brett goes, actually, we got done. I'm on my way. And as the fork is going down, Kellenberger grabs the plate and slides it back. And it's like fork hits table. And sometime at that moment, it was one of the funnier things that ever happened. We've laughed about it for months. But Brett shows up. He was able to eat his own Capri salad, and which sounds disgusting to me because I would probably die from an allergic reaction. But
yeah, you wouldn't make it long.
I wouldn't do well with that. But anyway, so I don't know why we got on that subject, but we did.
You can eat cooked tomatoes, but not raw tomatoes.
Raw, fresh tomatoes. I guess it's an acid content thing. I don't know. They do not do well with me. My hands peel and my lips turn really red. Yeah, I lose skin off the palms of my hands.
God.
I mean, it doesn't really hurt. It's not raw. It's just a little, just they start just like sunburn. They just kind of start peeling a little bit.
Yeah, the mental image of that is not good.
Really?
I have this image of like your hand peeling away.
Well, no, like, I'm not. I'm not like down to the.
Like when Jason Hayward made a slide the other day, and no, he came no, up and no. He looked at his hand, and I could tell from the television that he'd scraped the
really?
Hell out of it. Yeah, he probably going on the DL.
No, nothing like that. So, I'm telling you, I've been out of it today. We're gonna get to Mike in a second, but I put the trash out this morning, even though it's not trash day. You ever do that?
No.
I got up and my family's leaving town today. So right. I think that screwed up the day of the week. I thought, well, if they're going somewhere, it must be Friday in my head. And my alarm went off this morning the same time that I have a reminder set and typically on trash day to go off. So my phone buzzed and I went, oh, trash day. They're leaving, whatever.
Maybe you've become too dependent on Alexa and you can't perform without her.
Maybe so. So I'm up there and I'm throwing out the trash, and we got the new garbage cans all over town now, or outside the city limits. So, yeah, you know, you have to put everything in bags. I'm much more specific about the way it works. So I'm getting everything prepared, and then I go outside later, and my neighbor looked over and goes, "Why a day early?" And I went, "It's a great question that I do not have an answer for." So then I had to haul it all back into the garage.
Oh, you couldn't just leave it out there?
I could, but I worry about dogs or something. I have a little paranoia about that, so. Did a little extra work this morning. It's all right.
Yeah, it's good for you. Got a few more steps.
I got a few more steps. Few more minutes late today, but it's okay.
Because you're probably not getting much golf in today.
I highly doubt I'm getting much golf in today. I'm playing in the LOU OUB thing this weekend, so I went and hit a few balls yesterday just to because I knew today and tomorrow probably getting washed out. So
yeah, I don't like your chances to hit balls tomorrow at all, unless you just
I would need an arc that, tomorrow.
Unless you just decide that today's the day
it
that
I'll work
on. It would
be the Caddyshack thing when Bill Murray looks at the guy and goes, oh, you're good, keep playing. I don't think it's coming. The hard stuff's coming down for a while, and it's coming to monsoon all over the course. Yeah. See?
Sometimes you got to work on your wet game.
You like that movie?
Caddyshack? Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah.
I think it's a little overrated.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's a lot overrated, but it's still funny.
It's not a movie that when I catch on, I have to watch the rest of it.
Oh,
no, means.
No, no.
There are those. That is not one.
The one that, if it comes on, the first Hangover, I'm in. I'm
you
stuck.
You are into this movie.
I can't. If it comes on, I'm in.
Why that one?
It just makes me laugh. And the really? Other one is the first Anchorman. If it's,
well, yeah, that is
because it's fantastic.
I mean, that's a whole different ball game. We've talked about this. My weird one is Castaway.
I
watch the rest of Castaway every time it's on when I catch it.
It's really good.
I don't know, something about it. I just keep watching it.
And the scene where he goes back and his wife, she's now moved on and she has a child and. Yet she runs after him in the rain. And
no, hold on. I have problems here. All right. If you're the other dude, the new husband.
The new husband.
Yeah.
The father of the child.
That had to come and to say that she couldn't see him right now in the airport or the FedEx hangar or whatever.
Yeah.
So she's kept their car the whole time.
Well, it was his car too.
Well, okay, but we've kept it after he died for years and years and years running, and that's our vehicle.
Yeah.
All right. He just gets back from being shipwrecked for however long he was gone. I don't remember.
Several years.
Yeah. You have to go and basically make her not see him or see him or whatever earlier in the day. And she is able to bring him into the house, leave, go outside, come back and all that, and you don't wake up or make a peep. That just all goes on without any hitch whatsoever that night.
Well, maybe you just know as...
You woke up and went, just let it go.
You probably said, I got to let this happen tonight. I got to let this, whatever is going to happen in this
whatever
final,
this is?
In this final farewell.
Okay.
I got to let it run its course. I mean, the odds, you're thinking to yourself, she's got a child in the house. He's probably not going to take her on the table there. You know what I mean? But she was married to him. She loved him.
They buried nothing.
They never had a chance to have any closure. There was no breakup. There was no... It wasn't like a divorce or something. They would have stayed married. So they probably have some issues to sort through. And so you pretty much have to stay upstairs in that deal. And as much as you're... dying to know what's going on and probably dying to come down and stop it.
Gnawing your lip off.
You got to let that process.
Better pick up a Sudoku or something.
Yeah, you got to let that process happen. Now, when she goes sprinting out of the house, running up the street in the rain, you might be thinking, this didn't go the way I thought it might go. But then a little later, when she comes back into the house, soaking wet.
Okay. We survived.
And you're even happier when you find out that he goes and tracks down to deliver the package. And
why did you not open the box?
Because that would have ruined the movie.
What if there's a satellite phone in the box?
Sometimes you have to let things be Hollywooded.
Would you have opened the box?
Little. Yes, I would have, because I could have used the stuff. Yes, I would have opened the box, but that would have ruined part of the movie.
There's not a better moment of the movie than when he gets back for the buffet and picks up the crab leg.
It's fantastic. I laugh so hard.
It is just, it's so subtle, and he just picks it up and flicks it back down.
Yeah, like that's not how you do that.
Yeah.
It's not what it's really like.
This is what I get to eat. Just put a cow on the table, please. Thank you. I'd appreciate that.
Yeah. I've often wondered, like, how long, if you were really shipwrecked... Mm-hmm. With just the stuff he had.
Well, Gilligan's Island made it off just bananas and coconuts for years, so.
How long would you really make it shipwrecked?
Before I died from what?
Anything. Sunstroke, starvation, dehydration.
I don't know how I would get food, just being honest. I don't know.
You think you'd be able to hunt the way that he did? He had a skate he could use.
The dude became an adept spear thrower in like 3 months. No, I could not do that. I mean, he was like the shipwreck version of Paul Bunyan in like 90 days. No, of course not.
He did become one hell of a spear thrower.
Yeah, no, I mean, I mean, look, in that situation, you would figure out some way to improvise to some degree.
But you're not making it years, probably.
No. I don't think so.
Yeah, I wouldn't think.
Not without really getting a lot of help from the supplies around me.
How long do you think before you would lose your mind?
Well, see, now that might even hit me before the other stuff. I mean, that's what everybody talks about. Oh, the volleyball or the whatever was a sign that he had lost his mind. No. That was how he tried to keep his mind.
You know, he
that was a sanity mechanism.
He made Wilson a person.
Yeah. That wasn't losing his mind.
No. That was his attempt to hang on to his mind.
Yeah. Completely different connotation there.
Absolutely.
So, anyway. Yeah, I don't know. Castaway's one, though. So.
On this version of the Oxford Exxon podcast, we break down
Castaway.
This
isn't even a Friday. We have another one of these to do today. Just wait till 24 hours from now when you hear what else we rattle on about today as we're taping, too.
Because there's no freaking telling.
So, anyway, let's get to Mike Dettillier now on the podcast. If we do that, tell you podcast brought to you in part, Right Way Meds, located in Holly Springs. We tell you about every day. If you're confused about multiple medication bottles, labels, or waiting at the pharmacy multiple times per month, they have a solution for you under their program. They just deliver the medicine right to your mail. I mean, right to your door once a month. Strip packets, tear off the first dose of the day, next dose ready when you are. Making it easy there. Give them a call, 855-252-1011. Ask for Bob or Brian or visit the website, rightwaymeds.com. And also, if you're a doctor or a medical provider, ask how they can help with your compliance numbers.
Podcast also brought to you by Gambrell & Associates. Gambrell & Associates have three attorneys with more than 60 years of combined experience and more than 45 years handling only bankruptcy and Social Security disability claims. Check out their website at msbnkr.com or searching for Robert Gambrell on superlawyers.com or avvo.com. You should know that Super Lawyers only selects the top 5% of lawyers in the state for their listings. Gambrell & Associates handles Social Security disability claims statewide and in Memphis. For more information, call the office in Hernando, 662-342-7700, or Oxford at 662-281-8800. The podcast also brought to you by 7 South Tailgating. 7 South, owned and operated by Kyle and Jordan Thornton. 7 South is equipped with the largest staff in the Grove that can service most any of your tailgating needs. They offer SEC only and full season packages, complete rental packages, or you can set up your own gear. 7 South will set it up for you. 7 South offers complete setup, game day concierge, post-game trash removal, equipment breakdown, and year-round storage. They'll set you up in the Grove, the Circle, or on the outskirts of campus. It's the largest vendor in the Grove, yet they still manage to know each customer personally by name. You should know 7 South typically sells out for every game, so visit the site today and secure your spot. If you give 7 South a try for one season, you'll never tailgate without them. The site is 7southtailgating.com. The phone number is 662-321-1682.
Now, Mike Dettillier on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline.
All right, Mike, thanks for spending some time with us, getting a little bit of a – hopefully you guys can avoid getting just monsooned by the weather down there. I'm going to start with this because I think I read where you said that you think that perhaps the two best quarterbacks in the SEC, or maybe the SEC West, I'll let you clarify, going into this season are here in Mississippi, obviously referencing Shea Patterson and Nick Fitzgerald. Did I read that right or did I dream it?
No, you read it right. I mean, you know, you look at what Nick was able to do last year as a first-year starter. come in, not a lot of great talent around him, but, you know, he was able to uplift that football team as both a runner and a passer. Now, one of the things I'm interested in, and he is supposed to be here a little bit later in the week for the Manning camp, is to watch his progression as a passer in the pocket. I think that's always a big part of the game today, to be able to have that ability to throw the football accurately or more accurately from the pocket. I thought he did a nice job as a first-year starter, and he's got the tools to be a guy that can take you to another level with a little bit of help on the defensive side of the football. And with Shea, I've seen Shea for a long time. You know, he's a Texan that came to Louisiana, played some high school football here, was a terrific quarterback, and then went finish off at IMG. you know, Archie Manning and I were talking about this. You know, if there's an it factor, he's got it. I mean, you can see last year called upon once Chad Kelly went down, and he made so many plays, you know, for the Rebels offensively with his feet and also with his arm and a little better protection there. You got a guy who can really, really make some big plays out on the football field. And so, you know, having watched and I've watched Shea for a long time, and for LSU fans, I just think about it today. Had he come to LSU instead of going to Ole Miss, and his brother was actually a GA on the staff here at one time at LSU, just think how LSU would be looked at today. Shea Patterson and Nick are two of the best quarterbacks in college football, and certainly I believe in the SEC.
I'm curious with Shea because, you know, there was so much hype when he got here, and then he was going to redshirt. Chad Kelly was having another huge season when he went down, and it sort of forced Shea into those last three games. Whatever you think of that decision, it's done now. What did you see from him in those three games? Because he looked a little rattled at times to me. The Ole Miss didn't have a running game. The offensive line was kind of shaken up by then. He got was victimized by a lot of drops. What did you see from him? And then what do you sort of expect now that he's had a, you know, an off season? He's had some time to really prepare for a season that he knows is his. How do you expect he'll be different in the fall than he was last November?
He handled all of that well. The for him, you talk about a true freshman who wasn't expected to play. And he comes in there, and, you know, he had his moments where, you know, he was improvising, so to speak, when he didn't have that offensive line that could protect a running game. But what you saw, a playmaker, a guy that can do what he has to do, and he's so smart. And, you know, I just remember him as a high school kid and what he could do out on a football field and how he could translate to have the team believe that he was the leader. And you got that feeling, despite the fact the success wasn't tremendous, that he had taken over that team as a leader. And that's difficult, you know, when you're a young man thrown into that spot. And now I think he is unquestioned the leader of that Ole Miss football team. And you're fighting a little bit of outside forces now. And so you've got to be able to keep everybody focused and go. But I just love his leadership skills. And as a passer, I think he'll be a little bit more patient to stay in the pocket, let that receiver get open, a little bit more maybe trust on his offensive line. I don't think offense is going to be the issue with Ole Miss in 2017. Now, can they stop anybody is going to be, I think, the big question mark. But I'm just telling you, Shea Patterson, when it's going to be all said and done, he's going to be one of the all-time greats at Ole Miss at quarterback. He's that good of a player, and you can see he exudes confidence out on the football field. He's got that it factor that very few guys have, and also having the ability, similar to Nick, and it may be even better, improvisational. That ability to make something happen when things start to break down because of his elusiveness and his foot speed. You got something special in Shea Patterson.
Assuming that there's no breakout guy at running back. I mean, look, they had high hopes for Eric Swinney a year ago. He got hurt early. Actually got hurt on his very first college carry.
Yep.
You know, assuming that nobody breaks out and has just some magical season, they do get Jordan Wilkins back, but he's been more of a journeyman, kind of a running back throughout his career. They've got a very good receiver core. They do have to replace Evan Ingram. But they have some guys who can be impact wide receivers. The offensive line, at least from a pass blocking standpoint, is pretty good. Can you win in this league and win big with no running game to really speak of, no running game to truly count on?
You're not going to win big, but you can have a winning season, but you won't win big. The SEC is still, it might be old-fashioned to say this, but it is still true. You got to be able to run the football when you need to and have to, and you got to stop the run. I look at, I did a lot of junkets with Nick Saban when he was here at LSU, and he sort of had the same speech no matter where he went. Got to the point where I could have told a speech as good as he did. But one of the things he would always say was about that no matter what's going to happen in college football and how things are going to turn, that he always thought that the key was, one, having that ability to run the football when you need to and you have to, and to play that power game, that's always going to be a part of the college game, no matter what else changes around it. And secondly, and he thought the most importantly, the ability to stop the run. Because he made a point, and I think about this a lot in his years at LSU and his years at Alabama. He said, every once in a while you catch a gunslinger. You catch a guy that is a tremendous passer, and he can kind of riddle you a little bit, and you've got to figure out a way to get pressure on him. But, figuring in a season, you'll play one, and occasionally you'll play two, but you rarely play more than that in college football. These teams still, when you have that ability to stop the run and then put a lot of pressure on the quarterback, very few teams are going to beat you. I think about his time at Alabama and the teams that have given him trouble. It was Cam Newton and Auburn. It was Chad Kelly, at Ole Miss, Deshaun Watson at Clemson, Johnny Manziel, Texas A&M. But very few in between. I mean, that's just a handful of guys, and he term of the gunslinger, the guy that can make some plays. And so I think that you can get your winning season with that, but I still am a big believer in that ability to run the football, control the clock. And people talk about the spread. All I know is they run the oldest play in the book. They run the dive play. I mean, when they wrote the football playbook, I sort of believe the dive play was either on page 2 or 3.
Yeah, it was early in the book, for sure.
It was real early. It was an introductory chapter. So I do think that without a running game, you're limited, because you're going to have games in which your passing game's not going to be there. You play a team that can put tremendous pressure on you, and some of that's going to go astray. But I do think you look at his success, and I look at the gold standard, and he is that. It has been that his teams have been able to run the football when they need to and have to. And when you try to run the football against them, they slam the door on you. The key, I think, so much in college football is defensively, on the flip side of that, is not staying on the field more than 77 plays. When you look at how teams keep you on the field, 80, 85 plays, you look at the national championship game, over 95 plays on, I don't care how good you are, you're going to get wore out. And I was at a coaching clinic, this was quite a few years back, Chip Kelly was in his final season at Oregon, and he made this comment that if I can keep you on the field more than 72 plays, you're going to make 3 errors. And those 3 errors, I'm going to score 21 points. If I can keep you on the field over 80 plays, you're going to make 4 errors, and I'm going to score 4 touchdowns. If I keep you on the football field 85 plays, you're going to make 5. And I think about some of those games and how they've transformed. performed, and you can kind of add up those totals, and it's pretty close that he was right. And I think that's a wear-down effect. I just think today you're looking at a different world of college football in which you don't have a lot of depth on defense. And so for Ole Miss, I think key is to play a little keep away and to keep you on the field as much as you can and not put your defense back on the field. That's where a running game would have helped you. I don't think they have it, that they can control the tempo of a game with that rushing attack. And I look at Alabama, they've had that ability to do that, and that's why they've had such great success. It hasn't been because their quarterbacks have been great by any stretch, but it's been the fact that they control the tempo of a game running it, and their defense slams the door on you, and it's 1-2-3 out, and they create turnovers on the defensive side of the football. So to answer the question, I don't think you can win big in college football without a really strong running game. And if you're talking about contending for anything, you better have a real strong running game.
You know Wesley McGriff pretty well from his days with the Saints. He's back at Ole Miss, obviously, as the defensive coordinator now. It was a defense that last year was awful. There's no other word for it. They couldn't stop anybody. They couldn't get off the field. They probably played well enough to, along with your point, probably played well enough offensively to beat Florida State and Alabama, but defensively they couldn't stay in those games. I think Leonard Fournette is still running against that defense. from a personnel standpoint, from a scheme standpoint, you're pretty familiar with the personnel that is at Ole Miss. Can they be better this year? Is there anything they can do to shore that up some? You know, before there's a recruiting influx, if you will?
They can be better, but how much better is going to be the question mark? You have one signature, certainly with Haynes as a pass rusher, but there is a wear-down effect there. And what I don't see, and something Mark Richt told me years ago, too, when LSU, and Alabama were the two, big dogs in the yard, and you're playing the SEC championship game, LSU, Georgia, and I said, what's the difference? And one of the things he told me, and I think it's correct, he said, I look at LSU and Alabama a little bit differently than everybody else at that point, because he said, when they lose a player, the next guy to take his place is almost as good as the guy they lost. When the rest of us in the SEC lose a player because of an injury, or maybe he's not playing well, it's a dramatic drop-off. It's the lack of depth. And so I think that's something Wesley is going to have to fight. He doesn't have great depth, doesn't have a lot of experience there. The linebacking core was horrid last year. You can get secondary people, but I do think that the key for Wesley goes right back to it. His defense has got to be better in stopping the run. And I think because if you can get teams in third and long situations, then you can play sick'em, and you've got a sick'em guy in Haynes. The problem is, how much better can they be against the run? And what happens when you're going to have an injury or two? Because that's going to happen. It's not a question of if, it's when. So to answer the question, I think they can get a little bit better on defense. But where they need to get a lot better is being able to have talent that can stop the run. Because you saw in certain games that, teams just shredded them that way. And then you're able to throw the football. You try to bring a safety up to help in run support, then they beat you. So one thing equates to the other. And I do think that you look at the success of Mississippi State a few years back, it was because their defense was really good against the run. They could stop the run. You look at LSU's success, they built on the running game and stopping the run. Alabama's success, running game, stopping the run. You look at Florida with limited quarterback play. Having won the East the last couple years, they did it with a running game, and you couldn't run the football well against them at all. So for Wesley, it's a talent level. Scheme will just get you so far, but it's all about talent. And right now, I think the biggest negative on that team for Ole Miss is that they've got to get much better up front seven wise and stopping the run. And that means, you know, you got to go out and get big men that can clog up those inside running lanes and linebackers that can flow quickly to the football carrier and make a play.
We take a break in the interview. Let me tell you about Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, Settle County, and Chattanooga, 30 years old this year. All underwriting and processing is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting and understands your market. Also the leader in condo financing in Oxford. Ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float-down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. You can contact Jason at 662-234-2704 or jlowe, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com.
The podcast is also brought to you by Oxford University Bank. OUB gives you the comfort of home and all the benefits the big mega banks provide. It does it with all the technology and products you can want, all with a personal touch. When you call OUB, you speak directly with a live person, all without having to press 10 buttons and without a 5-minute wait. OUB is also home to the Kasasa cash checking account. With Kasasa, OUB will pay you 2.5% interest on your balance up to $50,000, refund ATM fees nationwide. It also features free online bill pay and the mobile check deposit using the app. Running your CDs right now at OUB, 1.75% APY. The 3-year triple option CD is 2.01% APY. And with that, you can deposit once during the term, withdraw once during the term, and or bump the rate if their 3-year CD rate rises. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. The podcast is also brought to you by Michael Oswalt. Michael's a realtor, specializes in recreational and timberland tracts across the state of Mississippi. He works with Tom Smith Land and Homes. It's by far the largest broker of land in Mississippi. Look up his site. It's gotland.com. That's got-land.com. You can read his recent testimonials. You can check out his track record and look at the properties online that he has listed. Here's the deal. The land market's very hot right now. If you're on the fence about selling your land, your hunting club share, or your home with acreage, now's the time. Give Michael a call today. He's ready to meet with you. Explain the process. If he can't earn your business in that meeting, he'll tell you he doesn't deserve it. There's three ways to get in contact with him. Call his cell, 662-719-3967. Visit his Facebook page or send him an email, michael@tomsmithland.com. Now back to the show. Let's talk about Mississippi State for a minute, because I'm sort of with you on Fitzgerald. I thought he was really good last year with the exception of the Alabama game. What's the upside for that team in 2017? How good can they be? And then flip side, you know, I know the over-under on them, I think in Vegas was, what, 5.5 games or something like that. So obviously there's not a ton of belief over there. What do they have to do to be a really good team, and how feasible is that?
Well, you look on defense, if my memory serves me right, I think they only returned 2 starters on defense. And
one of those has some issues, yeah.
Yeah, and again, so you got on that point. So you've got a football team now that, you know, lost a couple of their linebackers that was, you know, with Kevin and Richie Brown. And so now what have you got? You got a lot of young kids, a lot of juniors and sophomores that you're playing now. Again, offensively, I think they'll be a good football team. They'll be able to score points. I think they'll be better running the football up front. I know they don't return a lot of people, but they do have a couple of signature guys along that offense. So you've got the semblance here of a team that can score. Now you've got to figure out a way to, again, similar to Ole Miss, in the inability to stop the run. I think their secondary, which is fairly young, will come through for them. My biggest concern is along the defensive line, where, you know, that was a team that was noted for putting a lot of pressure on the quarterback, getting a lot of penetration. You didn't see that last year. And so that's a talent standpoint. You're getting beat in the trenches. And that's a major concern for me today. of how much better, it's almost carbon copy when you look at Ole Miss and Mississippi State from a defensive standpoint, of how much better can they be? Because you know, if you can't stop the run and you can't get good penetration into the backfield to affect the quarterback, you in shootouts each week. So, yeah, I might score 35 points and I'll win, but I might not. So I think Vegas has got that pretty good. I think, you know, they'll be right at that 500 level again as a football team and have great games by Nick. And they'll score a ton of points, but they're going to give up a ton of points. I mean, that's, you know, you look at both Ole Miss and Mississippi State, I think a lot of the problems are very similar. And it's the lack of top players in that front seven defensively. And those guys are the hardest guys to get in recruiting. You know, and talking to everybody that I deal with on an everyday basis about it, that's the biggest thing everyone's looking for. Or when they call me, hey, find me a linebacker. Find me a big defensive tackle that can stop the run. And those guys, a lot of times when you're playing young men, they're not quick impact players. You know, I can find a running back, a receiver, a defensive back. They can come in and play pretty quickly. Those defensive linemen and linebackers, they few and far between that can make that real quick impact. So I look at Ole Miss and Mississippi State in a lot similar vein, offensively being able to score. But that inability to stop the run and put pressure on the quarterback on a consistent basis is going to keep them right at that 500 mark, or a tad better or a tad worse.
Yeah, Vegas is pretty good at these over-unders. They sort of know what they're doing. Let me ask you about just a couple things around the league that I'm curious about. You're pretty familiar, obviously, with programs around the country. You've seen Jarrett Stidham a lot. What impact do you anticipate he'll have at Auburn?
Well, he's a gunslinger, and he's a guy that takes a lot of chances with throws. He's got a live arm and moves around, you know, above average in getting it out there. But he's a quick rhythm passer, so you've got to disrupt him quickly if you fix it on rattling him. The one thing he's got, he's aided by a really good running game. He's got a couple of stud backs in the backfield. And Auburn defensively, the one thing they can do, they recruit defensive front seven people really well. So I think Jarrett's going to have a major impact at Auburn. winning close games, I think, is going to be the important thing for them. And that's where the quarterback comes into play. And I look at Auburn expectation-wise, is very similar to LSU a year ago. A lot of expectations, a lot of hype about what's going on. I think Jarrett can be a real facilitator in getting them to be a 9-10 win football team. He is that good of a passer, if you can keep him healthy. He spots receivers real well. That's one of the things in watching him on film. And I know a lot of it was designated at Baylor, but it's the same system, just a little bit tweaked at Auburn. So I think he's going to have a major impact for that Auburn football team. What I'm anxious to watch is how that team reacts in close game situations, because I think that's the mark of a good quarterback, being able to take over in those spots and win you games that everything's on the line. Jarrett's got that component in him. He's a really good player, believe me. I don't think he's going to be the issue if Auburn doesn't do as well this year, because he's got an arm that can put the football in tight spaces, and he's a rhythmic passer. He reads, recognizes defenses pretty well downfield, and he's got the aid of a really strong running game, and they're gonna hit you both ways with it. And then their defense then takes over after that. You playing from behind, so you got to throw the football a little bit more than you want to. So I'm a big guy on Jarrett. I think he is going to have a major impact at the University of Auburn.
Your friend Ed Orgeron, his first full season as the head coach at LSU, they've got talent everywhere. They lost a lot of talent on the defensive side. And I think it's fair to say the jury's at least still partially out on Danny Etling, if not completely out. Are they good enough at quarterback? Is there enough depth that on defense to replace the guys that they lost for them to be a contender in the West?
I think they'll be a contender till November comes around. That has been sort of the tripwire for this football team throughout the years. Listen, Danny Etling, they'll go as far as he can take them. But he's not the weak spot on this football team. I think for the first time in doing this 30 years, I can say the big question mark for me is in the secondary. You know, I hear a lot of talk about, well, next man up. Well, it depends on who the next man is. It's difficult to replace a Jamal Adams, a Tre'Davious White. Both those guys were first-round pick people. Dwayne Thomas came in here. He's with the Patriots today. He did a fantastic job as their nickel guy. Ricky Jefferson was a very experienced football player. They've lost him. You lose Duke Riley at outside linebacker, who had a tremendous senior season for LSU. Kendall Beckwith, who has been a stalwart at middle linebacker for them. And those are big pieces to fill. And so, you know, if I'm playing LSU early, I'm going to test their secondary. Just because, you know, you got a lot of young kids with not a lot on the resume, I'm going after them. Now, I may have to fight off Arden Key and figure out a way to try to block him because I think he's a special talent as a pass rusher. And they'll be good against the run. That part of Dave Aranda's defense, I'm not going to question. The big part for me is going to be how well they can play in the secondary, losing signature players like a Jamal Adams, like a Tre'Davious White. Duke Riley was tremendous in the pass cover part of the game. Those are really hard pieces to come back together. How they get out of the early part of the season, I think, will be the real big key for them. Because once you get into October, all those young men now have got a little bit of experience, and you can kind of whittle it down. Offensively, they've got a signature back in Darius Geis. Offensive line-wise, they're going to be pretty good. Got a lot of young kids with speed at wide receiver. Not a lot of experience, but a lot of speed. And so with Etling, he's got to prove he can win those big games when everything's on the line. And, you know, he's limited as a quarterback. I don't think there's any question about it. But he's the best option at this point for Ed. And so he's got to hang his hat on Danny Etling this season. You know, I look at it, I think they're probably a 9-10-win football team, but my thing is going to be what's going to happen when you play teams with this style of new offense they have, which is predicated on putting a lot of people in motion, a lot of things going around. What happens when you play a team that's every bit as speedy, every bit as athletic as you on defense? Like a in Alabama, and you play both those games out on the road, and you play Auburn, which is a pretty good football team too. So I think how quickly that defensive secondary can come together will be a key. You know, I think, again, you're talking about probably a 9-10-win season for LSU, but I'm going after the secondary because for the first time, they really don't have a lot of depth or experienced starting people in that secondary. And so I know difficulty is going to be running against them, so I'm going to go after them throwing the football. That those early games, Brigham Young, Mississippi State, two teams that can throw the football pretty well, I think will be a huge test for Ed and Dave Aranda on defense. Offensively, they'll put up a lot of points. And I think you're going to see a totally different look offensively than you've seen from LSU. But the big question mark for me is going to be secondary. And in big games, when it's close, can Danny Etling make the throw downfield?
One more quick break in the show to tell you this part of the interview brought to you by MasterCuts Lawn and Landscape. MasterCuts, full-service lawn maintenance and landscape company serving Oxford, Tupelo, and the surrounding area. Whether you need basic things like landscape design and installation, landscape lighting, irrigation, turf, maintenance, or more, they can help you out when you sign that annual contract. And you mentioned the podcast, First Cut, also on them. Also, they are now partners with Skeeter Beaters. Let them mosquito spray your yard. Take care of that, whether it be for a cookout, for a family get-together, a game at a local park, or just because you'd like to have a little more security from those mosquitoes around your property. Again, either way, give them a call, 662-607-7773 or mastercutslawn.com.
The podcast also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. I've used Comer for air conditioning repair, and you can take my word for it. Their attention to detail, their customer service, and their work is second to none. Comer is an American standard dealer, but they work on any maker model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Visit their website, comerheatingandair.com, or check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about them on the podcast, and you get $20 off. Contact Eric at 662-934-3846 or Shane at 662-832-8749. Now back to the show. Last couple of things. I've asked you about this before. I'm just kind of curious to get your thoughts again. I'm a big Brett Bielema fan. It might be because I like his personality. It might have. You know more football in the tip of your pinky finger than I do. So it for me, it very well might just be. I think the guy's gregarious and funny, and he doesn't treat football like we're trying to, you know, stop a world war. It's just football. Why? That being said, he won big at Wisconsin. He came to Arkansas, and the program began to look differently immediately, yet they haven't been able to get over the hump. Why do you think that is?
Well, because they haven't pieced everything quite together. And one of the things you look at is, and I always put a little bit of equation, compare what he's put into the National Football League defensively. Compare that to what LSU and Florida and Alabama have done, and even Auburn.
Sure.
You know, I think that's been the part about it. They've been able to throw the football really well, you know, with some of the quarterbacks that they've had, and they've got a good one in Austin Allen. He's a really talented quarterback. That huge offensive line, they've always had a great running game. It's been on defense. It's in some games they have been absolutely wiped out, and we've seen that his inability maybe to stockpile the most important pieces, and again I go back to that front seven on defense, has been a major issue with them. We've had a couple of ends that have went to the National Football League defensive ends. But really, they don't have, from a talent standpoint, defensively, you know, when you look at comparing them to an Auburn, a Florida, an Alabama, LSU, you can't compare that. And I think that's been the big drop for Brett, in that he hasn't been able to get those top defensive players. And he's got to go out a lot of times outside the state. He's got to go into Louisiana, into Texas, into Tennessee, Mississippi, whatever. He's kind of go north, south, east, west to grab defensive players, and he hasn't gotten that signature front seven that you've seen that has been a big part of dominant teams in the SEC, where he's been able to do that on offense, stockpile offensive linemen, stockpile running backs. You know, he's had solid quarterback play. Receivers, he maybe doesn't have the speedsters, but he's had guys that get open. He's had some really good tight ends there. You can't say that on defense. You really can't. And especially along the defensive line and that linebacker. So I think that's been what Bielema has not been able to do there. And I think he's tried a few different things, tried changing schemes, tried changing coaches, has done different things to do it. It comes down to talent. And I think that's been the biggest part. And I think you see it not only with him, but with a lot of teams in the SEC now, that these seven on seven things have changed the world in a lot of ways. In that today, most of these young men want to play on offense. 20 years ago, when seven on seven was, that's that thing that's going out west, you know, in California, and they had a few of them in Texas. You think about 6'4", 215, 220-pound guy. Back then, he's playing defensive end or outside linebacker. Today, you know what he's playing? Either wide receiver or tight end. If I got a 6'6", 300-pound guy, he's not playing defensive tackle. He's protecting my quarterback. You just see it more and more. 7-on-7 has changed the college football world in giving you more of the pitch-and-catch game, but taking away a lot of what we had saw years ago with depth and quality depth on defense. It's giving you the defensive backs that can play, but it's taken away that front seven part. And I think you see it across, not only at Arkansas, but almost across the college football world, the lack of talent and quality depth in that front seven. And he's fighting that in a state that's not known to produce a whole bunch of defensive players or a whole bunch of football players that can come in and help in that part of the game. And now all these camps, they're not geared up for front seven things. They're geared up for throwing the ball. So I think that's been a big part of Bielema's issue at Arkansas, where he's won. Look how he's won. He's really won like he did it basically at Wisconsin, with a really strong offensive line, with that running game, you know, above-average quarterback, and getting it done that way. But he had more talent on defense there, where he had a little bit of pool of defensive players than he's got at Arkansas. I think it's going to be a major issue, not only for him, but for a ton of other schools in the Southeast Conference and across college football. This 7-on-7 stuff and the way the game is played in high school football, I think has directly affected what you're going to get from programs today. Where, how many great defenses do you see in college football? And, you know, 10 years ago, you probably could have named, you know, 10, 12, 15 schools that were really good on defense, really top of the line. You got a difficult time naming 7 or 8 today.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I think that's
changed everything.
Last two things. Texas A&M's AD put Kevin Sumlin on the hot seat before the season even starts. Has to win big, has to win a lot of games. Is his team good enough for him to survive?
I don't think so. Again, you'd have to define what big means.
Nine wins.
They've been the most underachieving program. You look at where they're at, the facilities they have, in the state that produces a ton of talent. They've been the most underachieving team in the Southeast Conference. Now, Johnny Manziel made Kevin Sumlin a ton of money. But ever since Johnny took off to the NFL, they've been a team that's above 500, but that's not winning big, and that's not what the fan base wants. So I'm going to give you a no on that. I think Sumlin, again, is going to struggle because of the lack of talent on defense, and he loses, you know, a Myles Garrett, you know, the top player in the draft, and they didn't get it done last year with him. What makes you think all of a sudden they're going to flip the switch? I got a lot of respect for John Chavis. Chief was here for a long time, did a great job at LSU, but those defenses look a lot like they were before Chavis, and that they're in shootouts every game. They're scoring 28 to 30 points and give up 35. I think Kevin's in a lot of trouble at Texas A&M because I think Manziel took them at another plateau, and now everybody expects that that's where they're going to be again. Well, that's not going to happen with who they have at quarterback. So I think Kevin's in a lot of trouble at Texas A&M. The expectations were really high. Manziel really was tremendous and making him a lot of money, believe me. And so now the fan base is, we want to win, and we want to win big. And if big means double digits, he's not getting there this year.
Ole Miss has a really pivotal game mid-September in Berkeley against Cal. I know your focus is NFL and this part of the country in college football, but if there's anybody that knows something about the Bears, it's probably you. Do you have an overview on how good they might be or how bad they might be?
In that game, take the over. No, I mean, this is going to be a shootout. Cal, I talk about Texas A&M being the most underachieving team in the Southeast Conference since Manziel. I think Cal is an underachieving team in the Pac-12. They've always got a ton of NFL talent that comes out of there, and yet they've won squat. New coach comes in. That system's not going to change. They're a spread option team that's going to throw the ball over the field. They like to get the ball out to the backs a lot, so coverage is going to be key in that football game. But you can expect that's going to be a wild shootout game between these two teams. Neither one of them, I think, is going to be able to stop each other's offense. The one big difference I give, and I give Ole Miss a shot here, is Shea, because they got the plus side on the quarterback issue. Theirs is off to the NFL, backing up Eli Manning. So, listen, you got a shot. That's a huge game for Ole Miss. But both these teams don't play defense well. Cal is not stocked on the defensive side of the football at all. What they want to do is get you in a shootout and think they can outscore you on every game. That might win every once in a while, but it's not going to win consistently. Boy, if you had a run game, that would be a perfect time to kind of really beat up on them. It'll be interesting game plan on Freeze's part on how he handles that against a team that is not noted for stopping the run at all. And only thing I can say is I'm interested in what kind of total that's going to be on that game, because having watched both defenses, I don't think either one's going to be able to stop one another much.
All right, very last thing, and really appreciate your time. You're fantastic. My partner here, Chase Parham, lives and dies with the Saints. As the season gets closer this fall, is he going to be doing more living or more dying?
Well, I think if he's used to the last three seasons, he'll be thrilled with this season. Listen, I don't think that this team is going to be that much better on defense. I like the acquisition of A.D. Klein in the middle. I think that they've gotten two really good young rookies in Lattimore and Marcus Williams, the secondary, to help out. But, you know, the scary part, this team hasn't even went to training camp yet. And they've lost Teron Armstead for at least half the season, maybe more. Who knows when Max Unger is going to come back. At first it was going to be week three. Now they've put it week one of the regular season. The initial reports that he would be out till October. And who knows with Nick Fairley with that issue. You haven't even hit training camp. And you've got three major health issues that are sitting on your plate. And I think the Saints will score a ton of points. But defensively, they're not a really good football team. And they just can't get turnovers. Everybody talks about pressure, and I'm a believer in that, too. I do think that there is an equation to that. But I think the biggest part of winning in the NFL, or winning at any level, is winning in the giveaway-takeaway department. And the Saints have struggled with getting turnovers. And you look at the early part of that schedule, it's brutal of what they got to play early. And then in December, guess what? You're so lucky. You get to play the Falcons twice. And they ain't going anywhere. I mean, I think they've got the best young defensive talent in the NFC. So I think the Saints are sitting at that 8-8 mark again. They've been 7-9. I think they're a tad better, but it's going to be a real struggle in a difficult division with, I don't know, another division that has four quarterbacks like they do in the NFC South with Drew, with Matt Ryan, with Cam Newton, with Jameis Winston. The Panthers won three straight NFC South. They took a dip. I expect they'll be better. I think the Falcons won't be quite as good win-loss record-wise, but they may have a better team because all that young talent, is coming back on defense. The mental part of losing that Super Bowl is going to be quite a ditch to jump. But if you put all of them on a lie detector machine, they would all tell you the same thing, and I'll tell you. The team that they really scared of, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They're the rearview mirror team. You take a look in that mirror and you see them coming up. A tremendous young quarterback. Now you've added Deshaun Jackson, O.J. Howard to the mix. You got a pretty good amount of talent on the defensive side of the football. I think it's going to be real tight. I think the winner of this division probably is a 10-win team, 9-win, and the other two are at that 8-8 mark. So if you love shootouts and you like over games, you'll like the Saints again this year.
Well, Mike, really appreciate your time. It's great stuff. Hope you stay dry down there over the weekend, and we hope to visit with you soon before the season gets started.
Well, hopefully it'll dry up, and then we can get Manning camp going because we got that cranked up coming Thursday and into the weekend. Hopefully this will pass, and we can get that through. And they got 1,200 campers and about 60 Clouders quarterbacks that will be glad that weather passed quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll cheer for that as well. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, buddy. Take care.
Bye-bye. Our thanks to Mike Dettillier for his time today on the Oxford Exxon podcast. He joined us on the Rebel Locker Room hotline, the Rebel Locker Room, West Jackson Avenue in Oxford. It's the place to go to get all of your officially licensed Ole Miss gear. Football season gets closer by the day. You want to get all geared up, and you can do it at the Rebel Locker Room. All the colors, all the styles, everything you might want. Ole Miss football season tickets available at olemisstix.com. That's olemisstix.com. Podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. Harry's an Oxford-based RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. He's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market better. Go to his site, harryalexander.com. Send him an email, ha@harryalexander.com. The podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, Grenada Nissan is the place to go. Located just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Grenada Nissan has a complete selection of new, previously owned, and leased Nissans. Whatever you want, they've got it. If they don't have it, they'll get it for you. Great service after the sale. Gene and Sandy, terrific people, friends of this site and this podcast for a long time. Give them a call. Check out their site. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com.
So thanks to Mike. Good stuff there as always. Great stuff. A little bit of housekeeping here. Story up on the site at rebelgrove.com. I talked to Brett Huber yesterday about his move from Ole Miss Ops to the St. Louis Pirates. Essentially, Rick Strickland, who started the Pirates in 1995, he is now a hitting guru for major leaguers. He's getting a lot of work as an advisor, a teacher, a coach, however you want to put that. Andrew Benintendi, Corey Ray, Matt Adams, among his pupils there. In that area, especially in the Midwest. So makes sense, Brett, taking over that organization from a day-to-day level, pretty much going to run the St. Louis Pirates, trying to make it a little more of a national organization instead of a Midwest organization. And, look, I've seen a lot of things. Again, there's nothing crazy here. He wanted to get back on the field coaching. It was a great opportunity. There doesn't appear to be much movement in the Ole Miss program from giving a spot to get on the field from a coach standpoint. Probably going to make a little better cash, if you want to be honest, even though I don't know that. And look, while I think Brett does a good job, I think everything worked out well. The ops guy is a very administrative role. Brett needs to be on the field. And also, you would much rather have an Ole Miss-friendly person heading up one of the top summer league programs in the country than you would anything else.
So, yes.
I mean, if you get a friendly face to be an ops guy or running a travel baseball league, you'd rather him run the travel baseball league.
And his first college on-field job, frankly, doesn't need to be Ole Miss.
Yeah, no, go somewhere else. Get some ideas. Move around.
Yeah, get just all of that. Nothing against Ole Miss or Mike or anything. But you don't want – I don't think – and, man, I don't know, but I'm just talking off the top of my head here, maybe I'm completely wrong. I'm guessing your first on-field job would be for your long-term career. It would be better if you worked for somebody who was not your college coach when you were a player.
Yeah,
it's no criticism of Mike at all. I've gone on record as saying I'm a fairly big Mike Bianco fan, but go someplace else. You get to have a different relationship with that guy because he didn't coach you. He's more of a colleague than a mentor at that point. You learn new things, learn a new system. Because if you ever become a primary assistant or a head coach, you want to be able to have the ability to incorporate different ideas and different systems and create your own what fits for you. Because what fits Mike Bianco, for example, might not completely fit Brett Huber when Brett Huber's 40 years old.
Right.
I don't know. I just rambled my way through that. I hope I made some sense.
No, you're good. All right, we're down to the final four, no, the final five, I guess, in the College World Series. LSU last night knocking out Florida State. And now LSU has to beat the Oregon State Beavers twice in a row to reach the finals.
That's it.
Win two games.
It's kind of like the Cavaliers. All they had to do was beat the Warriors four times, and they're the champs. That's all you got to do.
Saying you don't like the chances?
I'm saying I didn't like Cleveland's chances, and I don't particularly like LSU's.
You don't think so?
No. I'm not sure anybody can beat those guys once, much less twice.
They've won 23 straight games twice.
That's pretty good.
Had a few days off to get their pitching straightened out.
I mean, your only hope is that you catch them rusty.
Jared Poche last night for LSU became the Tigers' all-time winningest pitcher.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
38 or 39 wins.
Because they've had some decent
Well, it means you stay 4 years.
Yeah.
And I hate the wins stat. Mm-hmm. However, piling up tons of wins is a positive no matter how you go about it.
Means that the coach gave you the ball a lot. At the very minimum, in close games, you were handed the ball.
Aaron Fitt, good column last night. Just going to stay on this for a second. Everybody gets caught up in championships, the next thing. I mean, it's what's funny. You know, you can take Ole Miss football about this. Hey, when Hugh Freeze was hired, I had so many buddies tell me, just win enough, win seven, win eight. Let me go to the stadium every Saturday thinking we got a shot today. Mm-hmm. That's what I always heard. I heard, get to a bowl and then just give us a shot on this Saturday. Let us think we can beat so-and-so. Let's win the ones we're supposed to. And then as Freeze does that and they go to these access bowls, then it's, well, hey, let's win 9 or 10. Expectations change. It's human nature. It's life. Mike Bianco took over a program. Expectations climbed and climbed and climbed to a point it became a monster that I don't know that can be fed. Andy Kennedy's dealt with the same thing. I say all this to say, no matter what, I mean, there are Louisville fans right now that look at Dan McDonald and go, well, you keep getting us there and you keep losing, you jackass. I mean, it's just kind of the way it works. Mike Martin has become somewhat of a punchline for fan bases. Some people with his own fan base. Early 70s, Florida State head coach, baseball. Yep. A great human being. I mean, he finishes his last press conference last night and tips his hat to the media and thanks them, number one. And that's not why I'm saying that, but that's not something that's typically common. You get tipped, you get your hat tipped to you a lot, Neil?
I'm trying to think the last time. I have had some coaches tip their hats to me privately.
Yeah.
As you have too.
Yeah.
But publicly?
Yeah. So, Mike Martin's never won a national title. That's the thing. He's been there, never won it.
Yeah, well, so have a lot of people.
Yeah. No rings. Everybody makes fun of him. Here's Mike Martin's resume at Florida State. He has been a head coach at Florida State for 38 seasons. He has 38 NCAA bids.
Wow.
He has 38 seasons of 40 or more wins. Think He's about
been,
that.
Been there 38 years and won 40 or more every year?
Yes. Whew. He has 15 College World Series appearances. And he has an NCAA leading 15 super regionals since 1999.
So he's gone to the College World Series more than once every 3 years.
Yeah, about once every 2.5 seasons.
Yeah. Yeah, and people make fun?
Not make fun, but there's always just kind of a punchline around Martin a little
bit. Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's an incredible achievement. Winning a championship is really
– it's luck
really
at that
hard.
Point. It's luck once you get to Omaha.
I mean, I'll use the Theo Epstein example.
It's a double play, yeah.
He's a genius now because Ben Zobrist's ground ball
– got through.
Went closer to the third base bag than the third baseman was positioned.
Mm-hmm.
If he hits it another foot and a half – towards the shortstop, it's a double play. Instead, it's a double down the line. Almora scores. Rizzo moves to third, scores on Montero's single, Cubs win the World Series and Theo Epstein's a freaking genius. Nope. If the ground ball's a double play, he's still the same, just as smart as he is now. It's winning. Once you get to the College World Series, or once you get to the Final Four, or you get to the now the college football playoff or whatever, there's a lot of luck involved. One game, one series, you can't judge people on that. If he wins one title, all of a sudden everybody goes, "Oh, he's the greatest college coach ever." We overreact.
Skip Bertman had a lot of really good weeks.
He did. We overreact.
He's no better than Mike Martin.
Of course not. We overreact in the media. We overreact as fans. Social media has made it where everyone has to have a hot take about everything.
Yeah, Aaron Fitz column last night, the headline, "Those who would rather mock Mike Martin and celebrate his incredible legacy are truly misguided."
Can't argue that.
I'm looking at his thing. This is astonishing. He is 1278 and 476 at Florida State. He's 473 and 211 in conference play. Think about that.
No, it's unbelievable.
That's 2.5 to 1 in conference play, almost.
Put a bunch of guys in Major League Baseball.
I'm scrambling through this right now. I don't even see a 40-win season. I see 141-win season, but we're talking 45, 44, 50, 50, 50, 50. Big years.
Yeah, at a football school.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it's a different era. I understand that completely. He didn't win less than 51 games in his first 12 seasons.
Wow. Era Schmera.
Oh, I know, but.
Yeah, I know you know. I'm not sure how many other people fully understand it.
That's impossible almost, yeah.
Yeah.
Florida State, when they were in the Metro Conference, his record was 666 and 218 before they moved on over to the ACC. Who else was in the Metro? Was that Carolina too?
South Carolina, Tulane. I can't remember who all was in there. Was Louisville in the Metro then?
That sounds right. Let's see. Metro Conference.
DePaul, I think, was in the Metro.
The charter members of the Metro, whatever year that was Cincinnati, Georgia Tech, Louisville, Memphis, St. Louis, Tulane. Later joined Florida State, Virginia Tech now. Virginia Polytechnic Institute and State University. Good job on just calling yourself Virginia Tech, guys.
Yeah.
Appreciate that. Southern Miss, South Carolina, Charlotte, and South Florida and Virginia Commonwealth.
Paul was in the Horizon, wasn't it?
Sounds.
You pass right by. When you take the L from downtown Chicago and you go out to Wrigley, you pass DePaul.
Do you?
Yeah. Part of it anyway.
All right. A lot of other people, yeah. Basically, it became Conference USA, and then other people left and went to other places. But that's the majority became Conference USA.
So you think a lot of crazy happens tonight in the draft?
I wouldn't have any idea. I'm just being honest.
Potentially, there's a lot of crazy.
Is there?
This Kristaps Porzingis thing.
Yeah, I know.
I don't get it.
It's crazy.
7'3" guy on a rookie contract who can shoot.
So what is the reason?
Phil Jackson's ego.
That's really it.
That's it. Seven foot three. Appears to be a good guy. Can shoot it.
Phil Jackson as good as he's made out to be.
Great coach.
He is a great coach.
Yeah, he was a great coach.
Okay. Managing those rosters and egos.
He was good back then with the Bulls and with the Lakers at managing superstars, holding them accountable, all of that stuff. He is not proven to be even remotely
an adequate
executive.
Which happens. You're not good at everything.
Plus, you know, Magic Johnson was not a good coach. Magic Johnson was a hell of a player.
I mean, your guy didn't want to go coach the Marlins.
No.
Dan Jennings,
he didn't want to do that.
Jennings, yes.
No, he didn't want to do that.
I mean.
He wanted to be a GM.
It's not the same thing.
No, it's different jobs, different responsibilities. people have different strengths. But if they trade Porzingis away and just get a bag of chips and a soda pop, unbelievable.
Sources say Spurs shopping LaMarcus Aldridge for a top 10 pick.
I'm sure they are. He looked shot last year.
No shot at actually getting that, I'm assuming.
I wouldn't think. Consider the deepest draft, not the top heaviest draft, but the deepest draft in many years.
Really?
Yeah. I'll just go ahead and tell you, I love De'Aaron Fox. Love him. Don't know where he goes. And he might not be the instant impact player that Fultz perhaps will be, but I love De'Aaron Fox.
Your College World Series game tonight, 7 o'clock Central, ESPN2, the TCU Horned Frogs, and the Louisville Cardinals in an elimination game to get to the Florida Gators. Florida and Oregon State, your two teams in the driver's seats.
Would Florida have any chance to beat Oregon State?
I had pitched the crap out of it. You never know.
Yeah.
You know, but baseball has finally – college baseball has finally figured it out. Exact right formulas of bats and balls. They're hitting home runs at TD Ameritrade this year. They've actually had the same amount of home runs through the first so many games this year as the same amount of home runs at Rosenblatt in 2006.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, it's not the big Rosenblatt, oh, my God, every ball's out of here. But it's just baseball. If you hit it, it will get out. But now you got to hit it.
Right.
But well,
that's the way it ought to be.
Yeah, don't give me cheap home runs. But if you hit the ball hard, you can hit it out of the ballpark.
Yeah. Yeah,
they have found a really nice mix between the BB core bats and the lower seam baseballs.
Interesting.
Lots of reasons for that, but it's exactly the right mix. So it makes pitchers have to be better at throwing breaking balls. It gives the pitchers a little more velocity, which gives the hitters a little more exit speed. And then there's less wind drag and all that stuff on the ball as it's leaving. I mean, to get crazy off into physics would be dumb on my part because I don't know it enough. But either way, really good.
You went to Hatley?
I did, yes.
Come on.
I think I took physical science once, maybe. I don't think it's the same thing. I think I like...
If it was anything like Rustin High, it was, okay, now we're going to watch a video.
Yeah.
We'll wake you up in 40 minutes.
I think I like counted pinto beans from a final project or something. So, all right, Mike Dettillier, can't thank him enough for his time. He was outstanding. Again, Beer Garden presented by the Oxford Crystal. It was up yesterday with John Hamm, the salary cap expert, NBA insider there. So check those out. Tomorrow on the show, Andy Staples. Talk to you then.